This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It's great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And good afternoon. I'm Chris Kreidel. We've got temperatures in the 20s, and we'll get the five-day AccuWeather forecast out to you.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street now that we're back to trading. At Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, we are headed higher after the big rally we saw on Friday. The Dow is up another 13 points, and we are at 25,897. NASDAQ gaining 18 points, or 0.25%. S&P up 4. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is slightly lower. The U.S. wants China to keep the value of its currency stable as part of the ongoing trade negotiations. The two countries are talking about how to deal with the issue in a memorandum of understanding that will form the basis of a deal that would ultimately need to be approved by President Trump and President Xi. Home builders are feeling more upbeat about their future prospects. A trade group finds sentiment on the rise this month. Slowing interest rate hikes have drawn more buyers into the market. And Walmart posted its best holiday quarter in 10 years, and comp sales rose more than 4%. Stock in Walmart up 3.5%. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
Thanks. On today's Noon Business Hour, we may get some information today on a possible go-ahead for a major Chicago development. And just talking about Walmart, why is Walmart up by 4%? We'll talk about that.
Travel Tuesday, what do you do when an airline collapses like it did in the UK over the weekend? Do you get money back? What do you do? And McDonald's franchisees have a big problem with delivery. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Big step could be taken today for the proposed Lincoln Yards development on Chicago's North Side. We're going to be covering that on our next segment. But tomorrow's release of minutes from the latest meeting of the Federal Reserve will be scrutinized for clues to the economy. Let's get a preview, talk about the possible impact with David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors in Denver and author of the new book, Understanding Central Banking. Well, what does this say to you, David?
Well, it says that we have a new Fed. Remember how dismal things were following that December Fed meeting, that mid-December meeting when the Fed raised rates for the fourth time in 2018. The stock market literally collapsed on great volatility in December. That, by the way, shook up consumers. We saw a huge drop in retail sales, so the year ended badly. But the Fed changed gears and finally said, we're going to hold rates stable. There's a lesson case for further rate hikes, and everything has looked up in January. The stock market rallied. The economy looks better. Home builders are showing somewhat more optimism, and things look a lot better.
Yes, home builder sentiment rises, we're told, as interest rates stay in check. Let's talk about the future now.
Well, it looks like after great concern as we started the year over the possibility of a recession, it looks like that's no longer the case. We're seeing the dollar a little bit weaker. We're seeing a risk-on condition in commodity prices. Oil is up. Other commodities are rising. Emerging market economies are increasing. And most importantly, we're seeing a possible trade agreement with China, which should help growth there. A lot of the misery in our markets was over the possibility China was going to be hurt severely with a trade war. And that picture is brightening significantly.
Let's touch back to the Fed for just a moment. Do you get a sense that over the years the Fed has become more and more transparent, kind of giving us a lot of information about where they're going 1-2 years out, and that maybe given changes that can really happen at every moment, maybe they shouldn't give us quite so much? What do you think?
I think that's a perfect question, and I could go on and on about that, but I'll only say that the Fed should stop trying to forecast, most importantly, interest rates. To be sure, Fed policy has an important impact on rates, but sometimes the Fed's not sure where it's going, or it's not sure of the economy. That was the case as we came out of December into January, and that's the case at the moment. The Fed says we're going to keep rates unchanged. We're not sure about the economy this year. We're not sure about anything much, but all in all, I think the Fed is cautious, in part because it's uncertain about the outlook.
Now, it seems like what you do if you say, hey, we're going to keep raising rates, and then all of a sudden you change your mind and you do so publicly, it seems like it could scare investors. What does the Fed know that we don't know?
Well, it scared investors, and I think it fed back on Chairman Powell. He was fairly confident in 2018 when he raised rates four times, but suddenly the market collapsed in December, shook him up significantly, and also he saw signs in China, Europe, that the global economy was slowing. So he's backed off, and he changed the tone completely for the market in January when he said he's going to hold rates stable. So it's a completely different picture. I think on the growth for this year will be decent, nothing like last year when we were around 3%. We might be 2.5% in 2019, but at least we're going to have growth, no downturn.
One of our lines this morning is that home builder sentiment rises. What's that connection with interest rates?
Oh, it's critical, because as soon as the Fed said at the in the January press conference that they're going to keep rates unchanged, there's a lessened case for rate hikes, home builder sentiment has bounced back. The housing market looks better. It was getting hit hard as rates were rising so sharply after the Fed's December rate hike. Things have changed completely, and it suggests, as in the case of the economy, that if rates look favorable, it's going to be good for economic activity, including home building.
And talk about, when it comes to home building, talk about the impact on the wider economy, even more so than existing home sales. When houses are being built, it really impacts a lot of different groups of people.
It does. It always has. When we have looked at economic cycles, home building has almost always been the key to when the economy turns down. For example, you'll start to see evidence that higher rates are producing weaker home building and home sales, and that's exactly what we were starting to see. But there was no collapse there, and that's the point about the whole economy. As soon as the Fed said we're holding rates stable, psychology has started to turn more positive, and that's also the case in home building.
David Jones, always good insight. Thanks for being with us. David is chairman of DMJ Advisors based in Denver, author of the new book, Understanding Central Banking. Up next, the high-profile Lincoln Yards development in Chicago faces a vital vote.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Developer Sterling Bay is at a key point in its quest to build the sprawling Lincoln Yards development on the north side. Let's get all the latest from Danny Ecker, reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. Danny, I guess begin by giving us a thumbnail sketch. What is the latest as Sterling Bay tries to get this done?
Yeah, so we've seen Sterling Bay get a few approvals from city panels thus far. They've got a few to go here. And remember, this is a $6 billion plan. They would redraw 55 acres of the north branch of the Chicago River. They're talking about doing skyscrapers as tall as 650 feet tall. So this would be kind of a little bit of a second skyline for the city of Chicago in some ways, a mini skyline if this actually comes to fruition. Where this stands right now is Sterling Bay is there's sort of two tracks. There's one track in which they're seeking the city approval for the actual project they hope to build. And then the second track is they're seeking TIF money. You know, this would be tax increment financing money that would basically go toward reimbursing Sterling Bay for putting up the money to build new infrastructure, because some of the site that they're hoping to build on really is some issues with traffic and congestion and access. So this what's being considered today is by the Community Development Commission, which is the group that designates new TIF districts, is whether to create a new TIF district that would give Sterling Bay potentially as much as $900 million in public subsidies to improve infrastructure for their site.
And been some complaints about that, obviously, with the mayor's race going on and other races, things get a little bit more complicated than normal. The TIF, is it necessarily a done deal, or is it challenging still?
Not a done deal. There's obviously been recently some political turmoil at City Hall that has complicated matters, and that kind of added to, there are already some community groups on the north side in Lincoln Park and Bucktown, that area, that were already saying this was being rushed through. They're trying to push it through before Mayor Emanuel leaves office. One big challenge, I think, for the TIF certainly is seems to be moving forward. Certainly there's going to be pushback at the meeting this afternoon that starts here shortly. But the bigger challenge, I think, for Sterling Bay at this point is that there's a new head of the zoning committee now that Alderman Solis has been sort of embroiled in this scandal recently and lost his position as head of the zoning committee. So, that threw a wrench into this whole plan that Sterling Bay had to get their final zoning approval. And there have already been some people within City Hall who said they are not so sure about this. They like to see some changes before they're going to vote for it.
The plan is worth $6 billion here. For those who have not seen much about this plan and the planning and whether it's going to be on the table, what would this do to the city of Chicago? What would it give?
Well, it certainly would, this would shift the gravitational center of where people work. Not certainly the loop and sort of the core of the city would remain, but, it would definitely add a node to sort of the central business district that is so far from really where downtown is. I mean, this is sort of 3 miles really at its heart from the center of the loop. And so if you do see office users and companies embrace it, if that happens, that could create a really new type of office and commercial district on the north side in what has historically been industrial land, but, now is tucked between two very gentrified, wealthy neighborhoods in Lincoln Park and Bucktown.
Thanks for the info. Always good to have you on. Danny Ecker, reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. Still ahead, Travel Tuesday. Beware of the disappearing airline. We'll also check the markets with Bloomberg next.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's take a look at the markets with Elisa Parenti.
Chris, the Dow is higher by 18 points at 25,901. NASDAQ gaining 17 points, or about 0.25%. S&P higher by 5. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is lower by 0.33%. Last year, we kept talking about car makers scaling back production of cars, even canceling popular nameplates such as the Chevy Impala and the Ford Fusion, so they could make more SUVs. Now there may be too many SUVs. Ward's Auto says the availability of SUVs grew 12% last month compared to a year earlier, and that means discounts have increased to now just an average of just under $4,000 per vehicle. Now let's turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We have lower grain prices across the board. Corn for March down 5.25 at 369.5. December down 3. Beans for March down 11 at 896.5. November's down 10.75. And March wheat down 13.75 at 490.5. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. Great to have you with us. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are basically flat today. We'll see what's holding back the markets.
Travel Tuesday. What happens when an airline suddenly goes belly up and leaves you without a ride?
McDonald's franchisees bite back against the fast food giants. Push for delivery.
The reward has increased for a conviction in the murder of Demetrius Griffin, who was burned alive in a West Side Alley garbage can.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders says many of his policies are now being embraced by the Democratic Party, so he's running for the White House again.
Wall Street, the Dow up 15, the S&P 500, the NASDAQ is up by 16, and the S&P 500
That's up 4 points. Big sports news. Manny Machado reportedly signing with the San Diego Padres, not playing on the south side. We have some sunshine in Chicagoland with a high right up about 30 degrees where we are now. Some snow on the way overnight tonight into tomorrow, maybe 1 to 3 inches before it's all over. Right now, 30 O'Hare, 31 Midway, and 28 degrees along Chicago's lakefront. The noon business hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Markets have crept up a bit this hour. Not by much, though. Pretty much a flat day on Wall Street. Let's find out what's going on. Art Hogan is joining us. Art is chief market strategist at National Securities based in New York. Art, what do you make of what you're seeing today, the first trading day of the week?
Thanks, sir. Yeah, a lot of puts and takes here, but I think the largest of the pieces of news that we got today was interesting in so much as it's incongruous with what we heard last week in terms of retail sales. So Walmart, the world's largest retailer, came in and beat both the top line and bottom line in their fourth quarter earnings report. And the interesting thing here is not just that the stock is up 3%, but they talked about how the retailer e-commerce sales grew by 43%. So there had been a period of time that we thought Amazon was going to put everybody out of business, and I think that period of time is behind us. Walmart's done a great job reinventing itself and certainly growing its e-commerce business. So a lot of excitement there. You know, and away from that, we've got a very important week in terms of inputs. We get the minutes of the last Fed meeting, and we'll be curious to see if they have much to say about that balance sheet, because we think the runoff of the balance sheet may well be ending this year, and I think that would be a positive sign as well.
Well, let's put home builders on top of that. Sentiment is rising. Is that important?
Super important. And I tell you why, because of the pieces of economic data that slowed first. It was auto sales and home sales. And home sales are so important to the overall economy, right? We often talk about how the economy is driven by the consumer. Well, the largest investment any consumer makes is the house. And the economic benefits of a strong housing environment is certainly something that we've talked about quite a bit. So, yeah, I think any improvement from what we've seen, and it's been about a year since data has been positive here. It's certainly good to see an uptick in National Association of Home Builders confidence here today.
Where would you be investing right now, Art?
Well, that's a great question. I think as we look into 2019, I think the three sectors that are probably you want to overemphasize in your portfolios will be healthcare. I think healthcare has been kicked around as political football, and I think that the valuations there look very attractive. I think technology and technology that doesn't fade social media. I think social media still has that regulatory overhang, and I would avoid that. But any technology that software as a service, all sorts of things in there in the med device world. And the third, I would say, mid-cycle industrials, which are trading at a very opportunistic level here for investors to get in. I think valuations look good in mid-cycle industrials, and I certainly think if we get this China trade war conversation behind us in the first half of 2019, we can see a nice uptick in the industrial complex overall.
Art, back to Walmart for just a moment. You touched on the fact that they're up nearly 4% today after their report. Are they uniquely positioned to compete with Amazon, just given their size and given the fact that they can do something Amazon can't? They can say, go online, buy something, and pick it up at our store today instead of waiting for it to be shipped.
Right. It's interesting. So, you know, 3 years ago, if you told me Amazon was going to be competing with Walmart, I'd think you were off the reservation. And I think now the transition has happened. I think Walmart is looking more like Amazon and very competitive because they've got bricks and mortars where you can actually pick up and return things. I think Amazon was looking to do some of that with their opening a couple of stores and buying Whole Foods. So I think Amazon is trying to be more like Walmart. Walmart's trying to be more like Amazon, and we'll find out how that plays out. But I think that the folks that have been able to successfully compete against Amazon have done a nice combination of both. You have brick and mortars, but you certainly have an omni-channel, so you also have powerful online. Sometimes you partner with Amazon or you have your own online presence, and you have category killers. So, you know, think of those names that just won't go away. Lululemon and Nike come to mind, but, you know, all sorts of the category killers are certainly competing in an Amazon world.
It just shows, though, that when it comes to retailers, bricks and mortar, it's not going to be completely dead. There is an aspect for it that can maybe even help online sales.
No, absolutely. And I think that's the whole point. I think you hit it right on the head. It's not just that convenience of being able to buy online, but it's, you know, do I save if I actually go pick it up in the store and I have to drive by anyway? Do I have a convenient way to return this? And both those things, you know, come with brick and mortar. And, you know, largely Amazon's had a ton of brick and mortar, but it was just, you know, it was just where the warehouse and moved things around. So to the extent that Walmart's got the same kind of warehousing capabilities, but with millions of square feet spread across the country, I think gives them the upper hand on that. But I think we're going to see a whole lot more of that. We're still overstored. There's still too many square feet of store in the United States, and we're getting closer to where that's probably the appropriate level, but there'll be more stores that close this year. But I think it's a very, very good sign that Walmart is able to compete in the world of Amazon, and I think that's a trend that's going to continue.
What's in the pipes right now, Art, that will lead us to more information and some of the things that we didn't think could ever happen? You know, are we going to, in 10 years, have our stuff delivered in a flying taxi cab or a flying car?
You know, every time I'm stuck in traffic, I remember when I was in the fifth grade and told that I'd have a jetpack to get to work at this point in my life, and I just haven't had that, nor have I had much use for cursive writing or the decimal system, the metric system. But I will tell you, you know, so predicting the future is not easy, but I will. I think you struck on a couple of things. I think we're going to be not driving our own cars. We'll certainly get delivery in unique fashions. I don't know if it'd be flying taxis or some sort of drone, but I certainly think that there's a place in the middle for all of this to work. I certainly think we'll be using a whole lot more convergence towards power generation that's cleaner. I think we're already starting to see that. I think cures for diseases that we couldn't imagine 10 years ago are going to be on the forefront. So I think all those things are pretty exciting. So when you think about autonomous driving, when you think about artificial intelligence, virtual reality, and all the progress that we've made in creating and curing diseases, I think we've got an exciting 10 years in front of us. So when you think about those big trends, I think those are some of those, and it's the day-to-day that seems like it takes a long time to get there.
Art Hogan, always good to have you on the show. Art is Chief Market Strategist at National Securities in New York. Up next, Travel Tuesday, what to do when an airline suddenly goes out of business. And some breaking news from Springfield. Governor Pritzker has signed the new minimum wage bill. That means the minimum wage in Illinois will grow by $1 on January 1st of 2020, then jumps to $10 an hour July 1st of 2020, and then it increases $1 each year until 2025, eventually getting to $15 an hour statewide.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday here on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Kaler Luggage. The British airline Fly BMI called it quits over the weekend, leaving hundreds of passengers stranded. Let's talk about what you can do if you're in a situation like that, or maybe even how to avoid it. Joe Schwederman is joining us, professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul here in Chicago. Joe, so let's say you have a flight booked and all of a sudden your airline goes out of business. Are you just out of that money? Is there really anything you can do in that situation?
You know, it's a tricky situation. Many times you are. We've had a number of bad luck situations in the U.S. with Eastern and the second People Express a few years ago died and passengers stranded. Some credit cards give you trip insurance, but those tend to be pretty rare. And kind of your best bet when you book is to see, you know, is this airline a standalone airline? Are they affiliated with one of the large airlines? Like Lufthansa owns a number of carriers. And they'll stand behind the tickets and so forth. But boy, this story today about BMI, the passengers are just out of luck.
And so they're out of luck. There's nothing that they can do. If someone finds themselves in a situation like that, what do they do? I mean, just say, well, I guess I have to go and pay and book another airline?
Yeah, well, good thing in the United States, we don't have a whole lot of these real small fry airlines. There's a few floating around that, you know, have a half a dozen planes, and they could close any minute. You know, they're safe, but they're not backed by any sort of large carrier. In Europe, though, it's a trickier proposition. I'm just fascinated at how it seems like all the big countries have their own discount airlines that pop up. And they're all kind of on the margin making money. So we've seen this a couple times. There was an airline called Primera that folded a little while back, and now BMI. No one saw this coming. So when you're in Europe especially, you know, kind of Google the carrier and see if they're standalone, if there's rumors of them going bankrupt, because we're going to see more of this in the future.
Do these folks get their money back?
Usually not. Now, credit card companies, in some cases, if you buy a premium card, they have trip insurance, and you're represented at the table in bankruptcy proceedings, but you're a little far down the list. Sometimes your travel agent, that's a perk of buying through an agent, you know, they add a little fee to it, and that includes through trip insurance. So you got to exhaust those channels. But typically a refund is not forthcoming if the airline goes bankrupt. That's a sad reality.
The Fly BMI was advertising flights to Germany as recently as Friday, just a day before it collapsed. And it certainly had to know that was coming.
Airlines are cash flow operations. And it's funny, you look at what finally puts carriers into liquidation is, you know, they can't pay the fuel bill. The fuel company says, no, we're not going to lend you a plane full of fuel. And in this case, this airline, you could see, had been limping along. We look at an average number of passengers for flight was 17, and that's way below probably what it needed. Everybody over there is nervous about Brexit, and this was a complex one, but it's a shocker.
Joe Schwederman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul. Thanks for being with us. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. Still to come, a fight is brewing over McDonald's delivery.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Franchisees of Chicago-based McDonald's are trying to put the brakes on delivery. Let's find out why from Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com in Los Angeles. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Phil. What's the argument here?
Well, Chris, what's interesting is Steve Easterbrook, who's the CEO, has been pushing the franchisees into delivery. The problem is that the franchisees say that they're not making enough money. What happens is they have to spend about 20% of every order to Uber Eats. And when you look at the average McDonald's that does about $2.6 million a year, and then McDonald's takes, 5% on top of that. McDonald's also takes between 10 and 12% of sales for, rent of the restaurant. These franchisees are just saying, hey, look, we can't make any money.
And where do we go from here then?
Well, I think where we're going to go is the same thing we're seeing in grocery delivery, that, you've got to cut out that middleman. Now, I'm not suggesting that every, McDonald's franchisee is going to have to hire a delivery person, but they might. And that way they can keep more of the profit. And frankly, you look at the amount of sales, of the per unit sale. I mean, people are not ordering, 20 or 30 burgers at a time. Yes, certainly for some offices they might be doing it, but some of these orders are just between $5 and $7. And they're also, even though Easterbrook is saying that the sales are double what it is in store, they're losing all those impulse sales of people coming in and maybe getting a fries with it or, a milkshake or something else. They're losing those impulse sales, which drive profit right to the bottom line.
And ultimately, they have to, it seems like when you're talking about like a sandwich delivery or something like that, it's a bit different than McDonald's, where you really need to make sure that food stays hot and fresh. Tough to do if it's not delivered until 20 minutes or a half an hour after it was made.
And Cisco, you are dead on the mark, because a lot of these Uber drivers, they don't have hot boxes. I mean, if you look at pizza delivery, they have got special trucks that have heaters in them and so on. You're right. So a lot of people are disappointed when it comes to restaurant delivery. There were just some reports that came out about this about a month or so ago. And, I'm not sure that it is a good long-term strategy. Yes, Easterbrook wants to push the company forward into a good direction, but if you have your franchisees up in arms, and in fact, back in October, they actually created the National Owners Association for McDonald's, to really fight the company.
So much, always so good, so much information. Phil Lempert, thanks for being with us. Founder of SupermarketGuru.com. Bloomberg checks the markets next.
WBBM News Time, 12:55, and we're taking a look at the markets powered by ComEd's Energy Efficiency Program. Here's Elisa Peretti.
Chris, we are holding just north of the flat line. The Dow up 21 points, NASDAQ gaining 14 or 0.2%, S&P adding 5. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg unable to get things going. It is slightly lower. This is a sign of the times. Some workplaces are installing gunfire detection systems, which in theory could help law enforcement track a gunman. The Wall Street Journal says Toyota, Allergan, and Constellation brands have installed these kinds of systems at offices and factories. One provider of the systems has seen its sales jump 400% over the past year. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.